The kimono, one of the most elegant and expressive symbols of the island country of Japan, along with the tea ceremony and the world of the geisha. Unstructured and exquisitely beautiful, the kimono is a canvas simply waiting to be painted. And the kimono makers, the once nameless artisans, now designated living national treasures, have gradually transformed an everyday clothing item into an exclusive ceremonial garment or an artwork to be admired and hung, not worn. In other words, the kimono as art. Many fashion designers from both Japan and the West use inspiration from this age-old indigenous garment to innovate new designs to feature on their catwalk runways, pushing the art form further still. It is the antithesis of Western-styled, highly structured garments with its straight seams and figure-irrelevant shaping. The kimono, far from disappearing, continues to evolve, adapting to lifestyle changes and textile techniques. Hello and welcome to the Stitch Safari podcast, a sprightly and upbeat expedition into the alluringly appealing ambrosial world of stitch history, art and embroidery. Each fortnight we'll trek through and discover the utilitarian, the decorative, the quirky and the just plain fun world that is the art of the needle. My name's Kathy Jack Copeland and I'm the Stitch Safari Expedition Leader. I'm an Australian textile artist, teacher, judge, blogger and stitch enthusiast whose work in contemporary machine stitch became my business. Worn by women and men of all ages, the kimono is a simple T-shaped garment with a complex history that shaped the evolution of weaving, dyeing, and embroidery techniques in a culturally changing Japan. Simply made from a single bolt of cloth, approximately 36 centimetres wide and 11 metres long, it's cut into seven straight pieces, allowing the kimono to have been constructed easily in the home, particularly in rural areas. Modernization of the kimono during the Meiji period, 1868 to 1912, was a quest to place Japan on an equal footing with both Europe and America, gradually allowing the kimono to be identified as Japan's national dress. This coincided with the Japanese craze that inspired Western artists who were influenced and inspired by Japanese art, especially the woodcut prints of the ukiyo-e, or floating world, that swept out of Japan after its reopening in 1853. Japanese art and style transformed Western Impressionist and Post-Impressionist art by demonstrating a simplicity of depicting everyday subjects in an appealingly decorative way. And it's that design style with odd angles, asymmetry, and unconventional compositions that characterized this work, leading to all things Japanese becoming considered stylish and fashionable in the West. The Edo period, 1615 to 1868, reflected a person's role as a samurai, farmer, craftsman, or merchant in the design, material, and style of their garments. These included grand gold-embroidered textiles for the samurai, along with thickly quilted robes featuring brightly coloured designs of heroes and mythical beasts for people such as firefighters. Samurai women were bound by strictly structured lives, including dress codes revolving around the season, events, and time of day, and would have had richly embroidered and printed kimono for every occasion. One quilted fireman's robe from the late 19th century has a design of the gods of wind and thunder applied using paste relief, while another from the early 20th century, also made from quilted cotton, has a wizard turning into a giant toad design applied in paste relief too. Recycled fabric scraps were woven or patched together for farmers' robes, quilted for extra durability. And it was the newly rich merchant class who showed off their style and confidence through their dress, who really pushed new styles and techniques in Japanese kimono. But it was the kabuki actors and courtesans who were the tastemakers, idolized and followed by an eager public. And just as we've seen in so many other countries, when classes appeared to be getting above their station, the ruling elite issued sumptuary laws restricting the wearing of certain colours, dyes, and even silk, leading to a subversive element in kimono fashion, highlighted by the use of intricate patterning on a plain colour or incorporating a flashing lining. Even the geisha, some of the first to adapt to Western clothing, saw that their future lay in rebranding themselves as the embodiment of old Japan by wearing fabulous kimono. This is also the period that saw the very specialized and sophisticated dyed designs for which Japan is famous fully develop alongside the peak of technical advancement in embroidery. The kimono, meaning thing to be worn, was highly suitable for artistic embellishment, mainly because of its broad expanses of fabric, with artists soon recognizing its potential for decorative display, becoming a tableau to inscribe and describe the effects of the modernization of Japan, absorbing and reflecting cultural change. Japan was highly influenced by both China and Korea in terms of their garments, sericulture, and the textile arts such as embroidery. But after going through various stages of change, the kimono has retained its construction form for hundreds of years. The Japanese were also able to create a design style that deviated away from both China and Korea, yet used similar design elements. From the mid-17th century to the mid-19th century, Japan uses a highly stylized art form featuring flowing lines with a strong sense of design. So how did this juxtaposition of design elements come about to make the Japanese aesthetic so recognizable? One suggestion may have given rise and impacted the design format is the practice of frugality. Preserved sections from different robes were economically patched together so that different patterns appeared on the right and left-hand sides of the newly constructed robe. Japanese designers also favored a design format of alternating blocks of patterns or fabrics, perhaps also referencing frugality by reusing fabrics for patchworked blocks. These design formats may have been driven by economic needs. Nonetheless, they remained fashionable long after economies normalized and, with the addition of a striking use of color, became the principal means of decorating kasode, the direct predecessor of the kimono. But it wasn't just silk kimono that were recycled. Japan has a long history dating back to at least the 1600s, especially in the northern Japanese islands, where discarded indigo-dyed cotton fabrics were reused by industrious Japanese women who fashioned new uses for these precious pieces of cloth by working them into patchwork and embellishing with embroidery. They perfected the layering of several pieces of cloth, attaching each together with a technique called sashiko, and patching using another technique called boro, to create patchworked and embroidered textiles that were reassembled into warm clothing, futon covers, and household items. Sashiko, a traditional form of Japanese embroidery, uses a simple running stitch sewn in repeating, interlocking patterns, creating a technique that quickly became established throughout Japan. It was utilitarian, highly decorative, and offered greater protection from the elements as well as added strength and durability. Boro, meaning tattered rags, describes the lovingly patched and repaired cloth that gave longer life to precious scraps of fabric and greater strength with the addition of sashiko stitching. And Japanese designers drew on the fashion history from the Edo period, 1615 to 1867, during which time woodblock printed pattern books played a crucial role in transmitting fashionable designs. One rare example of the earliest Japanese woodblock printed pattern book was published in 1667. Western dyes and machinery imported into Japan during the Meiji period also had a profound effect on the kimono industry, helping Japanese textiles to become integrated into world markets. Shibori is the Japanese term for the highly refined dyed cloth incorporating unique designs utilizing binding, stitching, folding, twisting, or compressing the fabric. Japanese weavers also invented a stunning geometric, slightly fuzzy weaving technique called kasuri, where indigo-dyed fibers are bundled in a predetermined way to create a stunning design. Katazome is another highly sophisticated Japanese dyeing method that uses a resist of rice paste applied through a paper stencil, producing intricate designs of great beauty. And another way of drawing designs onto cloth simply uses a rice paste before dyeing, made up of rice powder, rice bran, and lime, easily adhering to the fabric, which is steamed to set the design. The Taisho period, 1912 to 1927, reflected a sense of prosperity and optimism through their colourful and cheerful design, combining traditional Japanese motifs with new Western design concepts to create spectacular kimono inspired by both the Art Nouveau and Art Deco movements. Motifs were dramatically enlarged and new designs appeared, drawing on inspiration from Western art, remaining popular until the 1950s. Following decades of the Taisho period, designs became more graphic. A man's underkimono from the 1930s features cameras and train tickets, while piano keys and libretti decorate a woman's kimono. One kimono even features Mickey Mouse. The Showa period, 1926 to 1989, saw kimono design continue to evolve, responding to international political and artistic upheaval, with propaganda kimono reflecting unique designs of contemporary politics of the 1930s and 40s. It was the perfect vehicle during World War II for war propaganda, particularly for boys' kimono and men's under kimono, featuring motifs of battleships and bomber planes. And Japanese embroiderers were able to formulate and innovate unique ways to express their work, utilizing a number of surface embellishments that appealed to the local Japanese sensibilities. With a preference for minimal embroidery, the Japanese embroiderer used far less than their Chinese and Korean counterparts. They tended to leave more of the ground fabric visible, combining other decorative techniques such as dyeing and painting along with their embroidery. Highly sophisticated, striking patterns were often embroidered using long stitches secured by other short decorative stitches, producing a pleasing aesthetic for the wearer as well as showcasing the skill of the embroiderer. Utilizing a myriad range of colors along with an extensive vocabulary of stitches, embroiderers often worked in conjunction with dyeing, combining the two techniques to give designs textual variety and visual depth, using untwisted floss for a rich sheen. Flat stitch, what we would call satin stitch, leaving a small needle width gap to delineate elements, was used for flower petals or veins in leaves. Long and short stitch filled larger areas, also using untwisted floss. A technique called katayori, where two threads are used, one is highly twisted, the other lightly twisted in the opposite direction, gives a knobbled, lumpy appearance, with a knot stitch also used to create texture. Japanese embroidery is well known for its dazzling metal thread embroidery, incorporating intricate patterns on delicate silk fabric. Made from a silk core wrapped in paper, then in gold or silver leaf, the threads are couched using fine silk thread. Embroidery was used on garments such as kimono, coverings, wall hangings, and bedspreads. Generally worked on a drawing made on the fabric, the coloured silk embroidery threads were selected depending on the patterns, the season during which the garment would be worn, along with the age and gender of the wearer. The embroidery would be worked in a frame, then covered with a wheat starch, smoothed, then steamed. This makes the threads stronger and shinier. And according to the Textile Research Center's website, Japanese embroidery is generally assessed on the basis of four elements, namely the technique itself, the designs of the embroidery, the colors that have been applied, and the selection of one or more of the 43 traditional embroidery methods that were used. Kimono are also embellished using a decorative technique where white stitches are embroidered over and under odd number of warps of the ground fabric, creating a diamond pattern. Fashion was big business in Japan, supporting an extensive network of spinners, weavers, dyers, embroiderers, specialist thread suppliers, stencil makers, and designers. And drapery stores were at its heart, the most famous founded during the Edo period in 1673 by Mitsui Takashi. These shops orchestrated the sale of kimono fabric along with the specialist workshops offering to create individual commissions with the aid of illustrated pattern books. The iconic status of the kimono reflects its integral role in Japanese society, worn at key moments in a person's life or for traditional occasions. These garments are revered, many handed down from generation to generation, and while its actual wearing decreases, its symbolic status has increased. It's a connection for many with their ancestors. From the 1990s, a growing interest among younger Japanese, fueled by fashion magazines, blogs, and social media, has seen the kimono once again grace the streets of Japan, indicating the historical ebb and flow of this supposed static yet unbelievably dynamic fashion garment. Kimono Jack are events where kimono wearing enthusiasts turn up at a public space to make their love of wearing kimono visible to all. The Dutch East India Company enjoyed exclusive European access to Japan from the 17th to the 19th century, with traders returning with stunning exotic kimono. And they actually had the kimono sleeves adapted to European tastes and even turned to Indian makers when demand outpaced Japanese production. Frank Lloyd Wright, the American architect, designer and writer, acquired a silk kimono decorated with a modern pattern of wisteria flowers and trellises on a visit to Japan around 1905, and it's believed this may have inspired some of the architect's subsequent work. Arthur Lazenby Liberty, the founder of Liberty & Co., sold silk from both Japan and China and collaborated with Japanese designers and business people to adapt their designs to a Western palette. Leading French fashion designer Jean Paquin was noted for creating a Japanese-inspired manteau, a loose gown or cloak incorporating kimono stitching designs. While using a traditional Western pattern, the influence of the kimono design can be clearly seen in its form and fullness of the sleeves and hem. Another French fashion designer and master couturier, Paul Perret, constructed what he called the kimono coat, creating a loose-fitting silhouette supported at the shoulder instead of the waist. Madeleine Vianney was also inspired by the Japanese kimono and fine arts, especially the checkered patterns reminiscent of Japanese lacquerware, which she interpreted into fabulous patchworked 1920s gowns. And from 1910 to 1913, shawl-style coats cut from a single piece of fabric using a generous swing-back style exposing the neck emulated a design feature influenced by the Japanese kimono. The Japanese design aesthetic has moved forward to inspire a new generation of Japanese fashion designers, including Issey Miyake, Rei Kawakubo, and Yohei Yamamoto, among others. An exhibition entitled Kimono Kyoto to Catwalk was held in 2015 at the V&A Museum in London, dedicated entirely to this garment, where 84 kimonos dating as far back as the 1660s were presented. Another exhibition, also held in 2015 at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, New York, entitled The Art of the Kimono, displays one kimono gifted to the museum by a third-generation Japanese wearer/donor. The Japanism craze at the end of the 19th century inspired Western artists such as Van Gogh, Cezanne, Gauguin, Whistler, and others. Van Gogh's style evolved through his admiration of the prince of Japanese artists. Queen frontman Freddie Mercury performed in a kimono in Tokyo in 1976, and George Lucas wanted John Mollo, costume designer in the Star Wars films, to make Obi-Wan look part monk, part samurai warrior in his now famous brown kimono. The romantic and exquisitely wrought designs of the Japanese aesthetic featured on numerous kimono, inspired many through their elegance and exoticism. From the understated to the overt, from wartime propaganda kimono of the 1930s and 40s to some of the most beautiful depictions of blossoms and geometric patterning ever seen, the kimono seduces and captivates still. And the Japanese understood then and now how to use numerous innovative techniques such as embroidery, dyeing, stenciling and resist pastes to work in harmony with each other in their designs. And that's the true beauty of the Japanese aesthetic, and it shines on in the kimono to this day. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. It's certainly been fascinating research of a design aesthetic I admire greatly. Have I whetted your appetite for more? I hope so. Thank you for your time. It's always appreciated, but there's so much more to discover. Stitch Safari's now reached over 5,500 downloads, and that's all thanks to you. It's also been mentioned as one of the 20 best embroidery podcasts of 2021 by Warp Magazine and listed in the top 5 textile industry podcasts as at September 2021 by Feedspot. And I'm extremely grateful. Please leave a message and subscribe to the Stitch Safari podcast. There's just so much more to discover, and it's all so fascinating. I do post interesting tidbits on Instagram and Facebook from time to time, as well as book reviews and a blog on the Stitch Safari website, so do head on over. Till the next episode of Stitch Safari and more embroidery adventures. Bye for now.